When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Monday's Terrace Podcast. I'm Graham Thewlis and today I am joined by Tony Anderson.
Hi, Graham.
Hi, Tony. And Joe Skidd.
Hello, Graham.
A real curate's egg of a Terrace Podcast lineup, this one. I think the number of times that you'll find myself, Joel and Tony on the same podcast, probably in single figures.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I'm trying to drum up the enthusiasm for our wonderful listeners here, but I've really got one of the busiest week of possibly of the year for me coming up as I've kicked it off by drinking 10 pints on a Sunday and ended up in an Indian restaurant till 11 o'clock at night.
usually think, right, if it's an Indian that finishes the night, you're fine the next day. It just soaks everything up, but fair play.
It's not like it's a terrible hangover, because I think the Indian does help it. It does. Eating loads then. But still, it's just so lethargic way to start, obviously. There's no getting away from that lethargy. And then it's like, and I say, we've got this. We've got the prep for the live show for Friday night. I hope people are listening or bought tickets. Great stuff. They've got to do it. And then I'm working late every single night outside of that as well. I don't know whether Fowler wants me to write that fanzine article as well. Oh, he'll be listening. I've overpromised that at times, but that's really and it's really long. That it's going to be over 3,000 words. I don't like writing, Fowler. I'm not actually. I try and stay out of it all. Every year, I try and get away with it, not getting involved.
How's it 3,000 words?
Because I'm doing an A to Z of the Scottish football season. Even if you get to 100 words per bit, that's still over 2,500 words, and that's being quite basic with it.
Just do it as like an acrostic poem. So A is for Aziz Behic. B is for
Behic Aziz. I've been over-promising things, so I've got to get a lot of work done. And like today was just did not kick that off very well. I've done what I had to do at work.
I asked Fowler on because I was promised Fowler an article, and I was just putting off, and I was like, oh, when do you need it by? And he's like, oh, but I'm hoping to send everything away by the end of the working week. So I spent my Friday night after having finished a full day of work writing an article on Alfredo Morelos, thinking, oh, I better get this in, bang, bang, bang. Now you got 3,000 words to write, and I'm not even started. Great.
No, I've started. I think I've got I've got 30 done, but they're all in random. It just when ideas pop, because I was meant to be keeping an idea of like a note of things over the season of ideas. That stopped after 4 weeks.
Yeah.
So we've got to like Martin Boyle scoring against Hearts, the equaliser, and then that's all at the ball. So I'm having to think about what I want to put in at each point. And it comes to me, I'm writing it down. I'm also a poor writer. I'm not particularly good at writing. I've got pass enough to get through. But like I've got the worst degree anyone's ever had. It was like a pass. Like the lowest pass you could possibly get, and then I bumped the fourth year. Because I'm not particularly academic. I don't know if people have noticed that when they listen on here.
The worst pass in English or just in general?
What was that?
The worst pass in English or just in general?
No, I think just a very poor degree is barely worth the what it's written on. And then I didn't do the honours year either. But I got through it. It was a pass. It does count. But you just don't say anything when you do. Oh, it's just a degree. That's it. Just put it on your CV. Nobody's going to talk about. Oh, so what did you actually get? No, that's none of your business, mate. That's too personal.
Sorry, in my line of work, I was raised to mind my own business. So, maybe you should know.
But Tony, now look at you.
What?
Now look at you.
Now look at
bald
me.
Bald and on TV.
Yeah, fat, bald, hungover, but occasionally get to go on the telly. So, check me out. You were wrong, Edinburgh University.
Well, let's start the week's roundup in the only place which is suitable to start. And let's start with B for Birriggetty. Livingston defeated Dundee United 2-1 at the Tony Macaroni. A team that simply could not win a game, playing a team that simply could not win a game. And Livingston managed to come out on top of that. Is there anywhere more worthwhile with the start than the first goal here?
No, I absolutely not. It is.
It's the box office moment of the weekend by some distance.
Yes, I enjoyed the fact that with Birriggetty, he's shown promise recently, but then last week he got away with a big one when he fell on his arse, and then this goal happened, and I'm just trying to bring it up just now. I enjoyed Alan Temple, a friend of the show. I don't want to dig him out, but I really enjoyed this line that he had about Birriggetty. I'm just finding it on the Courier just now, where he said that yet it is impossible to shake the feeling that the two-time A-League goalkeeper of the season has a mistake in his locker. There's no feeling. It's just fact. It's yep. just fact that he's got a mistake in his locker. If we're talking about his locker and mistakes, he is you can't shut it. You can't shut it.
Yeah, he's just his locker is just mistakes now. Like, he doesn't have it in there. That's all he has in there. It's just a big pile of mistakes.
He's hanging
on the hooks. It's stuffed in the top bit. Stuffed in the bottom bit.
The lock's broken. You can't even.
He's having to use his shoulder to jam it in.
He missed, and has put numerous dents in his neighbour's locker. Just an absolutely remarkable goal to concede, which, like, I've seen a lot of thinking this week that, like, with a competent goalkeeper, with Ross Laidlaw, where would Dundee United sit in the division? And I reckon pretty comfortably ninth. Yeah, distance.
I know Joe might not agree because I can see by his little face, but Dundee United have been really, really poor at points, but I think they would have another 10 points on the board about Birriggetty.
Nearly puts them in the top six.
I think that. So I really do think it is to that degree that they would still have had a poor season, but.
Yep. I think they would still be.
It'd
bad.
Be like a write-off season. You just write it off and don't worry about it.
Yeah, they'd be sitting alongside St Johnston, just like not good, mm-hmm. but we got through it and we move on and we just pretend it didn't happen and we got on with our lives.
I was speaking to someone over the weekend and apparently he's got really, really small hands.
What, your mate or Mark Birriggetty?
Mark Birriggetty.
How did you find out?
Just picturing him and just rocking up for first day of pre-season, and he's like shaking everyone's hand in the dressing room. Everyone in the dressing room is kind of just looking at each other and like, really, really small. He's the new goalkeeper. And then Birriggetty's sitting in the corner just, having shaken hands with all 23 players.
This has never crossed my mind before, but like it's a big thing in like the NFL draft. Like if you're a quarterback, they'll measure your hand size, and it's like a real judgment thing. Like everyone will look at see if it's a quarterback that's got tiny hands. You're just like that. Nah, the guy's simply a bust. He will not do it. Doesn't matter what he's done in college. Doesn't matter what he's done before. If his hands are too small, he will not succeed in the NFL.
It's his agent like going into the talks with Dead United. Just wear long sleeves and keep your hands in your sleeves. Do not let them see your hands until you've signed that contract.
Yeah, he's trying to use the pen in his mouth so he doesn't have to show his hands. It'd be like Warwick Davis turning up for the Chicago Bulls. Everyone,
takes his hands out of his sleeves to sign the contract. And suddenly, it's like two wee beetle hands. Tony Asgard tries to pull the contract away, but it's just too late. He's already scrawled his name on it in tiny wee handwriting.
Yeah, like the guy in Scary Movie 2 with the tiny.
I do. So I think this goal was really weird, and it's almost like he was there was like a force field around the box that wasn't allowing him to come out and just clear it. And I don't know, just going by Loic Aina, who's also partially at fault here, his movement suggests that Birigetti shouted because he's made the movement around him. He should still, though, block Anderson. He should make it a lot more difficult for Anderson to get to Birigetti. He should be much more ruthless and kind of blocking him off.
And how long do you have to spend time playing for Dundee United as a centre-half where you just take over in those situations, man? Yeah. If there's a possibility that you can deal with it, I would just say fucking deal with it. If I'm the manager, don't do it. When Birigetti goes to the toilet, just get everyone go, come here. You know, if you're in charge, though, just you make sure that you deal with it. Don't leave anything to him that we can help. And then he comes back to talk. I was like, "Oh, how you doing, Mark? Guy, good. Oh, feeling all right?"
I know it's a good bit, Tony, but ultimately, I do kind of feel that is Dundee United in a nutshell this season. Like, it's a whole collection of people who just are not taking responsibility for what's going on around them. And like, yes, I agree with you. You know exactly what is going to happen. You can see what's going to happen. Just deal with it in the first place. But similarly, like, it's, and I don't want to sort of slate Aina for this because he's a sort of young, he's a guy making his sort of early steps in the game. But when you look at a lot of the experience within that squad, there's a whole collection of guys just simply not taking responsibility for what's going on around them.
Look at, just learn it, like look at Mulgrew. Arguably the most experienced, I think
he's been playing experienced players in the fucking league.
Yeah. And you look at him for the second goal, it was just right. It's clearance. It's just it was just a lazy clearance, with his right foot, and then minutes later he's coming across to clear a ball, but he tries to flick it and rather than just put his foot through, he's trying to flick it to a teammate, and it was just like you of all people on this team should just be going right. Let's just no nonsense, back to basics. Let's just do, just have a bit. He should be the one that's exerting a bit of composure, a bit of experience, a bit of leadership, a bit of like almost being the manager on the field. And so there's been a lot of chat about Mulgrew's influence behind the scenes and kind of the coaching setup. It's like, do something on the field to suggest that you've got that within your locker.
I think it's been done to death, the Dundee United stuff, man. I mean, it's like the worst season they could possibly have had. This will go down in history for them, even worse than the last time. And this is one they'll be reminiscing about. We'll be doing Dundee United when we're all about 50 and we're somehow still doing this, or I'm somehow still alive. We'll be talking about Dundee United 22-23 season, because it's just absolutely
wild. The reason for that as well is that this has got to be one of the most expensively assembled sides that's going to go down. I know every time Joel or myself or anybody suggests that Dundee United are going to go down, that's the exact moment when they turn it around. But I struggle to think of a more expensively assembled side to sort of fall out the bottom of the league in a while.
Which is mental considering
they've got four like experienced international players in their squad: Mulgrew, Fletcher, Bayek. If I got carried away, who else is there?
Levitt, I suppose.
Levitt, aye. I mean, so we're
just, and the addition, and Fletcher in there as well. You've Even guys like Pollitt is an experienced Premiership player. Jamie McGrath is an international player. Glenn Middleton has a bit of quality heart because he's been at United for several years now. Sybold has been around the league for several years. Just a whole collection of guys, just not the amount.
They had to start with a 17-year-old up front, and then they replaced him with an 18-year-old. It goes back to just a colossal fuck up. Recruitment. Whether it was in the summer, and then again, you think right. So you can look at the summer and go, like we've talked about before, like, oh, that's a decent CV, decent pedigree, decent, but there was just no balance there. And then you think, right, readdress some of the key issues within the January transfer window. Ah, let's get rid of one of our strikers and just keep Stephen Fletcher as our only recognised striker.
He's always had injury problems and now he's old. I mean, it could have got worse for them in this game. I mean, Livingston could have won more comfortably. Obviously, since with that goal, I mean, we should say Bruce Anderson's finish is absolutely amazing.
Henry's as well.
For the two goals in terms of the finishing is absolutely first rate.
Bonnie, I watched the first, I think I watched the 75 minutes, 80 minutes. Mm-hmm. Bruce Anderson, before he got subbed, was absolutely brilliant.
He would be the nightmare. This is like the worst style of striker for that Dundee United team to come up against, because a guy who will never stop, will always press you, is just really, really busy. So even if you take away the other parts of Bruce Anderson's quality, which obviously I know me and you, Joel, are fans, but just even if he doesn't have that high quality, he would be a fucking nightmare for that Dundee United team to come up against anyway.
It was brilliant because he basically just started the game, right, I'm just going to focus on Aina. And then as the game progressed, he must have just taken a look at Mulgrew and go, fuck it, you know what, I'm just going to run both of them. Yeah. And he got the best out of both of them. It got to the point where Mulgrew and Aina were so terrified, they just backed off. And then, as we know, Dundee United have got fucking nothing in midfield when it comes to the defensive side of the game. And then, so basically, you're just having the Dundee United defence dropping off. And then there were just this colossal gap within the middle of the park because they didn't have anyone sitting there or providing a bit of balance. So Bruce Anderson was just dropping in, getting the ball, turning and just driving. It was mental. And then you look at with Livingston, when they countered, when they attacked, there was just times they were just running straight through the midfield. Yeah. There was Mantanio had a shot where he toe-poked over the bar and he skipped past Harkes and Sybold on the edge of the box. It's just powder puff stuff from United.
You're seeing like Montano, Penrice and Kelly all getting so much joy, even just in that. Was Penrice right wing? Was he doing the right wing thing again?
He started at right wing and then Martindale switched him at half time. He went to left and then he finished at left back.
Brilliant. And like Penrice has been doing a bit of that. He's been the Martindale player this season, where he's put Penrice, where you're like, that doesn't make sense. And then he does it it just works. And it's been the case of Penrice. He scored a few good goals this season. Penrice. And that one was an absolute top. It was a lovely little cushioned header as well. Was it Kelly who plays him in? And then DeLucas, his handball, you know, the one for the penalty. I know he had the goal disallowed, but should have been disallowed. But the one where he handles the ball in the box, I thought he got a bit lucky there, because he pretends like they had everyone to shut up after, and he just his arms out and it drops out because he fucks it and misses the ball.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think those ones should be given, because he's clearly not looking to gain any advantage and he's trying to clear it, but he fucks it up. But his arm's in a quote unquote unnatural position there, and it's high and he's not been given. It's a bit like, but funny for everyone else, he didn't get given.
I thought it was interesting as well from Livingston as well that Fitzwater just dropped completely out of the squad altogether as well. After the last few performances from Livingston as well, I did wonder whether it's a case of Martindale being like, right, well, you're not going to be here next year, so I'm kind of done with you at this point. And the flip side of that is Devlin, who is going to be moving on, but certainly looked like he was performing a little bit better in this game as well. So like, I don't know whether Martindale's just a case of like, right, let's set up for next year, and looking at Boys and looking at Parks as well, who have both shown sort of bits and pieces of being good players, but haven't really put it together in a more consistent fashion.
I think the next two games, Martindale addressed it afterwards, the next two games, I think he will start making changes. He said Devlin's last game is going to be this midweek. His last game for the club is going to be midweek. He said that apparently he was a few boos for Devlin, because obviously the signing came out for Aberdeen, so he's like, I kind of want people to recognise that was nothing to do with it, and that was unfortunate for Nicky Devlin, and wants him to have a great reception on on Wednesday. But yeah, he spoke about Jamie Brandon coming back in, the fact that the way he talked is like he could be Devlin's replacement next season, which I'm not too sure about. and Tom Parks as well, he came on and he did the basics very well. Yeah.
I wouldn't be wanting to be hanging my hat on De Lucas for the things that I've seen of him.
Oh, no. There's something that he plays the way a centre back does, not the one that you want in your team, but the one you like to watch as a neutral.
Yeah.
Well, another game which was a bit of entertainment for the neutrals was the early game on Saturday, as Heart of Midlothian hosted Aberdeen in one of the few games that actually still mean something in the league this year. So we'll nip across to Tynecastle, where Aberdeen took the lead before Hearts bounced back. Good contest, that. Entertaining game. Had fun. Joel?
Yeah, it was. I thought it was a great game. It was the first half especially. I think we played really, really well. And then when Aberdeen went ahead, you're thinking, How have we gotten to this position? But the goal generally scored to equalise was incredible. And over the piece,
it's going to take something like that to beat Roos, I think. Like,
oh, he was
at it again. I was getting the flashbacks to last week, and I was like, oh, is he going to fucking do this again? It can't be a strategy for Aberdeen. This can't be the way that they want to play. It can't be what gets them over the line.
He was fantastic, and he did. For a period, think we are going to do everything but score. It was like the one with the Oda. Some folk were saying, oh, he should have squared it. When you actually watch it back again, when you're a forward in that position, you want to shoot. And also, I think it was a difficult cutback or square ball to Ginelli. But over the piece, I thought we were thoroughly deserved it until Ginelli went off of what were the dominant side. And I've been sceptical about Ginelli, about handing him a new deal, just because he's hit a purple patch this season, and it's one of those where, do you give him a new deal and is this just a purple patch and that's all it is? Or is he actually found a position where he's going to be effective long term? But you saw how important it is to us at the weekend while he was on the pitch, and then noticeable when he was subbed with an injury, just the way he stretches teams. He's just a player who runs all the time. He makes a run and then he'll go and make the run again. He doesn't, like, for example, compare it with Stephen Humphreys. Stephen Humphreys would make one run and that was him. Yep. Whereas Ginelli would make one run, okay, he's offside, he'd be back in again and playing on his shoulder. And you've seen it when he went off, Aberdeen effectively just go, right, we can just push 20 yards higher up the pitch because Shanklin's not going to run in behind us. But yeah, I was thoroughly pleased with Hart's performance. Really, really disappointing Aberdeen's performance. So it was very one-dimensional, which is fair enough. They were missing their three best outfield players, three of the most influential outfield players. But it was just a very reactive performance, and I know Barry Robson, if he's he's not overly concerned about dominating the ball, but you just wonder at times, are they just a wee bit too maybe not standoffish because they'll engage, but do they just try and play on the counter a wee bit too much?
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh baby, Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
That's something I'm not going to criticize. it too much because it's got them a lot of results. But over a longer period, and when they play sort of the weaker teams and stuff, I don't know if you'll be able to get away with this all the time. I feel like they'll have to evolve somewhat going into next season. I think it's going to be really interesting at Aberdeen next season. There's pros and cons to what they've done with Bayer Robson, but it also looks like now that you've seen it over a 10-game period, you're like, if it's going to be this tight every single match, there'll be periods where it'll go against Aberdeen for 4 or 5 weeks at a time, and that won't really be acceptable because I imagine they're going to spend a fair amount of money, especially mm-hmm. when they go into thirds. So, and they don't have a deep squad, I think. That doesn't look like it. I don't buy into it. Like when it's Watkins, who is a player I used to really like, but he's coming to the end. They couldn't counter-attack without Duke. I thought they don't have it outside the Duke, and there's a few teams like this. I think.
Hearts are the perfect example, Tony, as well, because it's in the same way as Ginelli. And I do agree with you, Joel. Like, Ginelli has always been a player that's driven me absolutely berserk. Like, it's one of these guys that you watch highlights of and you watch games of, you're like, and think that if he was in my team, he would drive me absolutely spared. But similarly, if he comes out of that Hearts team, they have to sign someone almost the same. Ultimately, it just has to be him or another couple of players that just have just that electric pace that just stretches the game.
Yeah, because both these teams, I think, lack it.
The
Hearts, and the minute you took Duke out of the Aberdeen team, obviously Duke's a lot more than just pace, right? I mean, he's a fabulous player all round, but in this team, he's like the only one who's got any sort of real athleticism. Like, Aberdeen the first 20 minutes, Aberdeen had loads of opportunities to counter, and it just broke down because Majowski and Watkins didn't have the pace to do it. So like that. So it was like another thing for you see the difference for Robson. Certain weapons taken out, the style will work. It won't work at all. And then and against Hibs, I thought they were beyond poor. I was like, I remember I said it to you last week, Joel. It took me 20. I wouldn't settle into it for 20, 25 minutes about Hibs playing well because I was like, maybe this is Aberdeen's ploy. But eventually, like, nah, they can't be just wanting teams to be running over the top of them. For
they dropped in Richardson out in the right, and presumably with the idea of having, because he is, again, he's a willing runner, but he just has absolutely no quality.
Yeah.
So he's and that's the problem. That's what Ginelli brings. That's what Duke brings to a much larger degree, is they have a bit of a product at the end of it. And Richardson can stretch the game a little bit, but he is not a good footballer. He always, any time I've seen him, he played really well at Firth Park in a game that Aberdeen cuffed us in, but simply because the whole team was set in a way in which Motherwell just could not deal with on the day. And Richardson was really, really good and sort of flourished in that sort of role. But against a decent team, like, he's just not going to have the freedom and the ability to do that.
And the fact is, you add in McCrory and Shinney, the two, and you put Duke in as well, the three players who, when they get the ball, they travel so well from A to B with it and kind of with dynamism. So, yeah, it was disappointing for Aberdeen, but it wasn't unexpected just because I know, having watched them, how influential those three players are.
I think the only time that they looked like they had any sort of control or looked like to play well is in the last sort of 15-20 minutes. They dropped Clarkson deeper and he was starting to get on the ball and he was pinging brilliant balls either way. He was starting to spray passes and getting them in behind Hearts fullbacks and starting to create pressure. And his, like, I think, passes into the last third from deep, brilliant, man. And that's like such a brilliant skill to have when someone can do it with such precision and at pace, because that's how you can build yourself into a game. But outside of that, I thought there was they offered like fuck all.
And it was a real opportunity for Aberdeen to go and essentially cement third place. And now they've just let Hearts back into it just that little bit. Hearts got a chance.
Yes. It just goes back to last week against St Mirren, just so frustrating to have that missed opportunity because we'd be sitting third, just with our goal difference, we'd be sitting third right now. But it's frustrating. We talking about my pals in the pub. You think if he switched, it made the manager change slightly earlier. It's like Stephen Naismith is winning around a lot of fans. Just with how he wants to play,
looks like he's trying to build some sort of identity and he wants to play forward football. And I think that gets you on board. Like, the thing about Bayer Robson, it's like they've just replaced, they all moaned about McInnes for years and it's like they've almost just replaced him with they are it, fuck around for a few years, then just go back to the younger version of Derek McInnes. That's how it looks to me, anyway.
Yeah, yep. With Hearts, the frustrating thing is that Robbie Nielsen is he as player and manager in two spells. I do think he knew how Hearts wanted to play and the identity Hearts fans wanted, but then he moved away from that towards the end of his second spell. You'd had obviously the focus on playing through Robert Snodgrass at all opportunities. Now Naismith came back in, and it's where Naismith came in, and there's a lot more energy to the team. There's a lot more.
Haring's brought a bit back, hasn't he?
Haring's kind of provided that stability in the centre of the pitch, and it's allowed. He's brought Nathaniel Atkinson back in. I'm not his massive fan, but he was very good on Saturday, and he's
athletic as well. It's like the thing you're talking about, that there's certain things a football team has to have, and if you lack that in certain areas, you have to use the guy that does have it, even though he might not be the best, because you have to have these certain attributes to be anywhere near good.
Yeah, and it's now more forward thinking. He's been given freedom to attack, and he's a better attacker than his defender. And then you have Oda as well, who's very raw. He still needs to be refined, but he's got so much energy. He's got so much enthusiasm and willingness, and that's probably the biggest change within the Hearts 11 now is that enthusiasm and that. A wee bit more spark and dynamism to the team. There's a lot more. There's a wee bit more running power within the team as well, and still needs more. But when you have that, and you still have the quality the Hearts do with certain players, then you are going to be a lot better than you have been for a long time.
And we've got the Clark fuck up in this one. Is there a goalie fuck up in every single game?
Yeah, probably, because yes. There's a lot of shit goalkeepers.
Yeah. I think, and obviously that for our Patreon listeners, that's what we're going to talk about, some of the worst goalies we've ever seen, because the goalies were at their worst this weekend, I think, over the piece.
Before we move on to the next one, Graham, I do think we got away with a potential penalty with Harry Grindon Watkins. As soon as that happened, I was thinking, oh that's a stonewall.
That's what I thought as well. I don't know really why it seems to be completely brushed off as well. But hey, we don't want to go into this. No, please, Graham.
No. And as we said, we're discussing some bad goalkeepers later. And here we'll go to a goalkeeper who had another bad day, Joe Hart.
You could have gone anywhere.
I could have gone but I reckon I've got a better chance of links later on down the line. Joe Hart, who had a very poor day as St Mirren took a point at Parkhead. And I was quite scathing last time I was on at St Mirren being a bit... sort of, we've arrived in the top six trophy, only to then, take the lead against Celtic after 4 minutes through Curtis Miami, who had an absolutely sensational game.
Graham, he could have walked away at Celtic Park with 5 goals. It would have been thoroughly deserved, because just for his season, I think he's just been such fun. And he's been Curtis Miami, at his very, very best. And you saw that. It was interesting. He spoke to the media afterwards, and he was like, yeah, I just looked at Iwata playing in the centre back, so I'll just stick with him, because he said he's usually when St Mirren, I think, essentially defend or attack, he moves wide. Yeah. To get the ball, whereas he's like, I just stayed central because of the Iwata being dropped into an unnatural position, really. And Scottish Rook, when he's seen very early on the defensive fuck up, it looked like Dundee United.
It was shambolic.
Iwata, Ralston, so naive the way he's like, aye, let's get back into position. Curtis Main's not going to want to cut back on his favoured right foot and shoot. Let's put him there. It was just amateurish.
Then Joe Hart just looks like he can't be bothered. It looks like the most lazy. With it, like it's like late on at fives, and you've been putting goals, and you're fucking knackered, and you just can't be You put a foot into it, and you're just like, will that buzzer ever fucking go? Please.
No, it's more or less. I've been stuck in goals for ages, and I want to get back out.
I'll let out. I'll let one in. But I mean, just that St Mirren side again. Ryan Strain looked superb again. Yep. The deliveries, so much quality, man. And Graham, I know you're a big fan. I think
big time.
He's like the playmaker. I've said this before. Like when we were talking, he's like the playmaker. Everything goes through him. They always look to get the ball out to the right hand side, and he's the main avenue for all their attacks.
It's just watching St Mirren just now, it just feels so very familiar, because it's Stephen Robinson's teams when they work are just, they're exactly like this. They'll go and take on basically anyone, and if you're having not a great day, which is what Celtic had ultimately,
they're
the worst team to play, because they just prey upon other people's mistakes more than anything else. The problem comes is for Robinson teams is when teams start to figure that out and just do. If you just stick sensible, you will not get caught out by them, because they don't necessarily have the quality to try and outplay over the course of 90 minutes. Anytime you're just a little, if you're at 70%, 75%, which ultimately I think this Celtic team is in a large part, because like, we've won the title, we've got not absolutely zip to play for, we've just got to go to the Scottish Cup now. Anytime you're just a little bit off it and they'll just punish you. And that's both of the goals kind of felt very much along those lines as well. And that said, we did get to see a little bit of quality from Celtic as well. Furuhashi's goal is firmly struck a ball as you'll see all season.
He just he scores every type of goal, eh? It's like he doesn't look like having a thunderous shot is not the first thing that springs to mind when you think of Kyogo, but there it was like sort of like he doesn't always get the chance to do that because of the style that they make him play. He's very much, he drops off and he plays, but he does look to like go beyond. He looks to, it's all about his movement. He tries to get in goal scoring positions. He's very much a striker. So like to get to see that, he just every type of goal, it doesn't matter. It's in his locker.
You see, it's the part he played in just before as well, because he ran in behind, I think it was, he ran in behind Richard Taylor and he took Joe Shaughnessy across with him, and then you could actually, you'd see him point, I can't remember who had the ball on the right hand side, he saw him point to Rio Tati, basically give it to him, and then Taylor was like, oh, I don't know whether to go with Furuhashi or Rio Tati, and then that gave space for Tati to then feed Furuhashi with, then yeah, an absolute emphatic finish. But just once I think they've just, I know they've wrapped up the league and they've been off the last few weeks, but it feels like they've just not been, they've not really hit their best consistently enough since the start of the year.
Yeah, maybe like try to think. Maybe after the League Cup final, I feel like they've like kind of just been not going through the motions. But I think they've tired. I think they've quite simply tired a bit, and the quality still gets them through. But I suppose this is just the style of play that Postecoglou does. I mean, you see it in other countries. Not to use it, but Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, the first time he sort of changed his style a bit over the years because they couldn't see it through all the time. Obviously, he doesn't really have that problem here. I mean, because he can go flat out and he'll not get caught. But maybe there could be something for, just because the rest of the league's sort of poorer and Rangers are still miles ahead of that, that if they can get one result against Celtic next season, they could be in with a chance. It could happen.
Potentially, yeah. But I'm not convinced more than anything else that the depth is really there for Celtic. The best 11 that they have is so far ahead of everybody else. The problem is that as soon as any of them drop out, and you would imagine that we're maybe someone starting to look at moving on or starting to think about doing something else. But the depth really isn't there. And as much as guys like Ralston within the Celtic squad are the sensible guys to hang around, because ultimately the trade-off to that is that you're going to have to go and sign another right-back of Alistair Johnson's quality and then not play one of them, which is just a daft way to spend your money. But the depth just doesn't really shine through, perhaps.
The key, like they need, like Carter Vickers, Taylor, McGregor, Hatate, and Furuhashi are all irreplaceable, I think, for them. I mean, like the wide players, I'm always like, I mean, they could get away with it, you know, like,
yep.
But there is, you see Johnson's probably another one. Like, yep. they're sort of like, the squad looks brilliant, but I always think the depth's all in the forward positions. It's all, and like it's like I always think, wow, they've got so many good players to play, you know, in the wide roles, and then they've got a couple of midfielders in there. But that defence, yeah, there's the drop off after Carter Vickers is like insane, and you see the impact it has on Starfelt as well. I mean, he's not as good as when as Vickers is there. So yeah, there's vulnerabilities that you didn't really see, but they haven't been that good for a few months now. It's a fair comment.
And ultimately, like the St Mirren kind of gave them a warning before the second goal as well. Like they did almost the same thing of just launched the ball in the box, contested, just went sort of slightly wide. But then the goal when it came was essentially just like how I remember Stephen Robinson teams exactly. It was just a big midfielder wins the second ball, and Mayne just sort of peels off and pins the centre half. Good goal.
I'd loved his the one that hit off the post to creep into
the back.
That's
a great strike.
It was a fantastic strike, and it seems like the chat is that he's going to leave St Mirren. He's out of contract at the end of the season, and unless there's a big payday
in that for him, I think he's off his fucking head doing that.
Yeah, I know, because he suits Robinson, he suits that kind of football. But at the same time, as the weeks progress on, I'm thinking more and more, would I take him at Hearts? He'd be an absolute disaster, but I'm tempted to give it a go.
The amount of Hearts fans sitting in their house listening to this podcast, rolling their eyes at you, Joel, there, it'd be unreal. I know, but a lot. We get that a lot because obviously we try to watch a lot of the games of other teams. So we watch this, so I think we try and talk players up. And we almost believe our own shite sometimes when we're comparing them to like English Premier League players and world class players. And then when they come to, you're like, maybe they're not that good.
Well, Curtis Mayne's been like Drogba-esque this season.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. Get him at Hearts. I'm up for it.
Speaking of not that good, let's head to the BBSP Stadium at Rugby Park. As St Johnstone secured their safety, which seemed kind of lost on the radio afterwards, where they talked around how they still end up in the playoff despite the fact that was impossible, as they secured their safety as a Liam Gordon header, a Liam Gordon goal, gave them the win in a game which it was the most inevitable and most disappointing thing in the world simultaneously.
Just to clarify, is Callum Davidson away from St Johnstone?
I believe so, theoretically.
That's right. I was in Dubai for a week, so I must have missed it. It's a massive win for, obviously it's a massive win for St Johnstone staying up. Obviously Stephen McLean coming out before the game and saying how confident he was that they were going to win, and
strategy.
Derek McInnes, but you look at it in the wider context of St Johnstone in the period they're about to go into. They're up for sale. Brown and another member of the board are stepping down. Jeff Brown's kind of taking over, almost like interim charge until they find a new owner. So there's maintaining the premiership status.
An interim owner. Sorry? You don't hear that every day, an interim owner.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. They're heading in for a period of flux. And if they were to go into the championship, then that would be I could have a massive negative impact though, whereas they got the premiership and it allows whoever's up next to rebuild, and they don't have to have that worry of being a second tier side trying to find a new owner hanging over them.
Yeah, it's a massive plus point for them, because you would have really worried about them, but you think with this that McLean will get the job simply because nobody's going to want to rock the boat, nobody's going to. Well, nobody, the interim owner can be arsed having loads of interviews, I'm guessing.
It ultimately comes down to how long it's going to take. Like if it gets to, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks before the League Cup season kicks off, and things haven't moved swiftly in terms of the ownership and the managerial things, that's a real problem for them for next season as well, because they need to start doing business in terms of managerial side. They need to start picking up players. They now know they're safe, so they can start doing that. They start trying to approach players and look, because you know exactly where you're going to be playing next season, and they need a lot of work.
Just give McLean the job now, even because I know they're going to do that. I know they're going to.
No chance with Stephen McLean. Unless things go wrong, I cannot see Stephen McLean being the manager. He's done exactly what's been asked of him. I would be surprised if he wants the job at this period in time. I would be deeply unsurprised to see someone like new owners come in and appoint like Robbie Nielsen.
That's if they get the new owners, though.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely screaming out. It's screaming for that to happen. Let's say if maybe
Tommy Wright will come back to help them steady the ship.
If you're the interim owner as well, which is the weirdest thing I've ever said, I think, if you're the interim owner, you're not going to be, how willing are you to be sanctioning, signing players, buying players,
releasing
players?
How much do you pay yourself as an interim owner? What's the acting up pay for that? I'd be fucking wiping the place clean.
It depends whether you're Craig Levine that has to find out who's the best person to appoint, who's the best manager to appoint at Hearts. It's Craig Levine. That sort of logic within that as well. But yes, they've just about got away with it this season. Unless they move swiftly, and maybe that has been part of the reason why things haven't moved more swiftly in terms of the ownership of the club, because they're waiting until they can confirm exactly where they're going to be next year.
There's a real opportunity for whoever comes in, because you're looking at, well, Zagrodin will be shipped back to Dundee, you'd imagine. Conor McLennan back to Aberdeen. Jamie Murphy gone. O'Halloran gone. Chris Kane, not sure. I'm imagining they would probably give him another year. Witherspoon potentially on his way out. Melko Hallberg's on his way out. Murray Davison, I think, is on his way out. Charlie Gilmore's away. Alex Mitchell, Adam Montgomery would be away. James Brown. And then both keepers look like they'd be away as well.
So they'll give Parrish another year.
I think if am I right in saying he's might be doing their goalkeeping, maybe their goalkeeping coach at the moment?
I think he is, yeah.
Explains a degree of Remy Matthews' performances this season, right enough. But you look at the goal they scored was, I think, the most apt goal that kept St Johnstone in the league. Shit.
Yeah. And similarly, the most apt goal for Kelly to lose in an absolutely crunch game that they had.
Doigy. What is going on there, man? It's absolutely appalling. There was some interesting things. They played, Luke Chambers played midfield, according to Wise Scout, and I spoke to Scott, and he said that Luke Chambers got moved into midfield alongside Donnelly and Watson. And I actually thought the first 20 minutes... But look at the highlights of what I read, that Kelly looked all right before the red card. I felt like Kelly looked like they were on top, and they were creating quite a lot of chances. But that went away. McKenzie was sort of looking after the left hand side, so McKenzie was like sort of doing that all himself, really. And that's Andre Wright got in behind for that shot.
Well, you can do that when St Johnstone's right hand side is James Brown.
Yeah,
yeah. Fine. I'll just stand out here. I won't get beat by him.
Yeah. And so, but Constantine is also goal side Dorset if Gordon misses it. So I think for the goal. So I mean, Constantine could just scored that as well. So it was like they were queuing up and normally done anything. Donnelly hits the post with a nice shot, doesn't it? It's a really nice technique. And Cammy Ballantyne,
he looked good,
and it's something they absolutely have lacked in there so much is some energy in the middle of the park. And it looks like they might have finally found some, because obviously when I saw McGowan was back in the midfield, I'm like, we've done this before. I don't love it. But McGowan with a bit of experience in there with that young midfielder and someone who can do the legs, so McGowan can maybe help talk him through it with his brain, and then Ballantyne can be his legs, and they can make some sort of competent midfield out of it.
It did. Yeah. It did work, because McGowan was apparently absolutely tremendous. He was man of the match, and he has been.
He's been way better for Saints than I thought he was going to be.
Yes. And I think he's been one of their players of the season. I know in a way it doesn't say much, because there's been a lot of inconsistency within the St Johnstone team. But he's, when he's played, I know he had a wee injury. Period out with injury in the middle of the season, but when he's played well, it's been the right centre back or in the centre midfield. He has given he's given St Johnstone so much.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh baby, Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Aye. Watson, definitely red card. He looked. He got himself too excited. He looked too... You know, that's the problem with Kilmarnock. They're in this position, and they have to play Watson because he's been playing really well. But this is what happens when you've got really young players. So that's the rub.
He's essentially like a border collie of a midfielder. So like every so often that's going
to
happen.
It happen, you just have to accept it.
He's been very good, not a real positive for Kilmarnock this season as well. But again, it's like the Mulgrewen the other week when he got sent off for United. You knew they were going to have to bring in Ryan. You knew they were going to have to bring in Edwards. Getting sent off there means that he's going to miss what is a massive game against Dundee United midweek as well, which is now looking like the crunch tie.
Donnelly looks like he'll be out, and I know you're not a big fan, but he has been playing. He's been playing all right the last couple of weeks. He looks like he could be out as well. So that would be Donnelly at that. So two of your three midfield. The other midfielder is actually a left back. They were playing in that one. So this, I imagine this whole midfield's going to be completely different for the game. And obviously power will come back.
I'm going to Tannadice on Wednesday, and I cannot wait. I cannot wait.
And obviously, Kilmarnock didn't score, so I heard that Scott was telling me that Armstrong crossing was just abysmal all day, overhitting crosses. Well, if that's happened, there's not going to be any goals. So,
Well, from one team that had abysmal crossing to one team that was scoring with crosses, as Rangers defeated Hibernian 3-1.
This was
not a great day for David Marshall.
What a weird game of football this was. The whole day was really weird, I found. Joe, you were there. I mean, there was issues with getting into the ground.
Yep.
So everyone was getting in really, really late. They were trying to search everyone. Well, it felt like every single Hibs fan was in there. But then when I got in the stadium, Rangers had flares in that every single minute of the game going off. Different part of it. But maybe do it over there then. But so loads of people never got in, so there was no buzz at kickoff because the East Stand was pretty much empty. And then I got in about 10 minutes after for the queuing, and my mate told me that it'd been like Jers had a few chances. Then I thought Hibs got really into the game for 20 minutes and thought it looked like there was something to be had. Rangers looked like going kind of through the motions, not trying, but you know, you just could tell it wasn't like full throttle whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And then Marshall's just, it was the worst way. Hibs had that unlikely task at hand anyway to try and build ourselves into a game to beat Rangers full stop, but to build up to maybe try and get the better European spots. It was all unlikely. And so the worst way to lose a goal is like a gut punch way when you've just gifted it to the other team because the goalie kicks it in, and then it just like nobody in the fans, obviously just like, nothing's ever going to come of that now. That's that up the pole. And it became like a really, really flat atmosphere because obviously there was just no belief for the fans. Like, this team's hard to believe in anyway, like for any length of time, because it's just so wildly, the performances are just so wildly all over the place. So it was quite a weird game. And then obviously Rangers managed to get their three goals.
It was the fact that James Tavernier, he knew going up to that free kick, he knew what he was planning. He was I can score against David Marshall from here, because there was a clip of him turning around to Hadji and he just mouthed, trust me. And then so he knew exactly what he was doing. He does it time and time and time again, Tavernier. He's just 101st goal, won 400 appearances. He's just been an unbelievable signing. Despite, I know he still has his critics within the Rangers support, but he saw within the way they're playing how the system probably suits him a bit more now. It's given him a bit more freedom to get forward. Beale came out afterwards and said that he was just happy for Leon King and Suter to defend 2-on-2, just leave them to kind of man the back line. And I thought Suter was magnificent. I just like you saw Suter at his very best. He had the booming crossfield pass for Cantwell, who then got fouled for the free kick. But where Suter really upped his game last season at Hearts, and it was like physically dominant there, and also with playing in a back three, he's so very good defending out wide, and he saw that against the fact that he was having to cover for Tavernier, who was playing high up the pitch with Juan in behind.
Tavernier was having a few bits. There was a period where he was having a bit of bother with Juan as well. Juan was getting past him quite a few times, but Suter would sort of was cleaning it up behind him. So he's had a he's really come at the fore now. So, I mean, I think I'd be interested to see what they do next season. I mean, will they play him and Goldson, or is it Suter playing better here because he's getting to play in his rightful role, or because Goldson's not there?
Yeah, Beals talked about three. Obviously, Gorton's going to miss. There's a chance he could miss a start of next season. Just depends.
Right, okay.
Depends how long he takes to recover from. So he's got a foot injury. He needs to stay off it for 6 weeks. And then he has to undergo a modified, this is Beals' word, a modified pre-season. So he could start the season. Well, he could miss the start of the season depending on how his recovery goes. But you've just got the perfect, like, Suter is the perfect replacement for Goldson and what Goldson brings to that Rangers team. The issue is that I wonder just if they're going to play a three, you would have Goldson as the middle of the three. I think with Suter, if you played him as the middle of the three, you'll lose a wee bit of what he gives you in possession and defending wide.
I'm curious as well, because it was something I asked you a while ago, and Beal felt like he was using Ryan Kent in that sort of freer role for Rangers in the forward area, and I'm not convinced Kent is a good enough footballer to play that role. Yanis Hadji might be, is a more curious, he's less of a, he has less of the sort of, obviously the pace that Kent has, but just in a purely footballing sense, that I feel like that role maybe suits Hadji a little better. Obviously he needs other kind of actual centre forward beside him, and I don't think Sakala is of that quality, and they're going to go and have to recruit in terms of who that is. Either that or Čolak is going to have to significantly up.
Sounds like they're going to get rid of Čolak. That's what the murmurs I've been hearing for reading about. I thought Raskin had a better game. I thought he saw a lot of the ball, and you could see the sort of the combative side of him in there that hasn't always been coming to the fore. I think, and I thought he played pretty well against Celtic as well. So I'm thinking he's maybe slightly getting better. Raskin here, we'll see. And obviously Jack was back in the team, and Jack Raskin and Cantwell, I think, is decent. I think it's pretty good. They'll want to recruit again in that area, but I think there's something in that is for three players in there. But this really narrow sort of team that he's picking with Sakala and Hadji, they can split out wide. Cantwell, Raskin, Jack, and Lundstrom all playing. It's pretty overkill in there a bit.
Certainly the first half against, I've just thought it was so dull.
It was so shitty. I was like bored. I was getting so bored. The minute it went 1-0, I was kind of like, I wouldn't be against it going 2 and me getting to the pub right now.
Yeah. I think it was, I looked at the first half stats, was like 340 passes to like 87. I was just like, fucking hell. That felt long, and yeah, that backs up how I felt watching that game. I just like it was one of those. You said it, Tony. It was just such a flat atmosphere, and you don't expect that when Hibs and Rangers get together. You expect it to be a bit more fiery, and especially with Hibs needing to win more than Rangers, and it just had that end of season feel to it. I was just like it was almost like. Richard Keys, like silly little game, fuck off.
Yeah, I was not impressed with it at all. I was like, I think the fans, the team just had no faith in it whatsoever after that first goal. And it was like, right, let's just get this up the road. Hibs did have a few chances, like in fairness. I mean, Josh Campbell from the Kevin Nisbet cross, but he was just stretching, he couldn't quite make it. And then the Kevin Nisbet header that just drifted just wide when it looped up in the air in the second half, right when it was still 1-0. But yeah, then it was up the road. I was gone at about 72 minutes when I think Paul Hanlon kicked the ball directly out the park from a free kick.
Fair play to you, Tony, because I would have left maybe about 15 minutes earlier.
Now, which one of us had Paul Hanlon in being the first player to score against Robbie McCrory's sweep?
Robbie McCrory was dodgy in this game.
Yes.
Really dodgy all the time. Kicking, handling, everything about him, he looked nervous.
Agreed. I don't. He's you're looking at. I don't know if new Rangers fans, Barry Ferguson 4-1. So give him the chance at number one. There's nothing I've seen from yesterday or. His spell at Livingston, which suggests he is a good enough goalkeeper for Rangers, let alone a good enough goalkeeper for I was going to say a good enough Premiership goalkeeper, but I look at some of the other goalkeepers in the Premiership. Yeah, he's
fucking miles ahead of them.
More than capable.
I think he'd be better than Marshall right now, I'll tell you that.
From a game that felt very long to a game that actually was very long, Motherwell and Ross County, as Kevin Van Veen added his 400th goal of the season in 90 plus 8 minutes. For a game
Kevin
which...
Van Pen.
Pevin Panpeen.
27 goals. Not an actual SPFL record or SPL record or league record, despite what many people are attempting to tell us all. Something which should not take a huge amount of time. A Motherwell record, right enough. In a game which looked like it was almost destined for nothing each throughout, this was very, very good fucking fun. Like, I had a really, genuinely really good fun day on Saturday. Ross County did not offer a huge amount over the course of the 115 minutes or whatever it was that we actually played in the game, but looked well on their way to collecting a hardly well-earned point on the road, until a penalty in the 90+8, which Kevin Van Veen dispatched readily. Couple of just more decisions. I think what I really enjoyed about this as well was not only the game itself, but the aftermath, in which we saw Malcolm McCrae sobbing away.
Don't Malcolm McCrae.
Don't Malcolm McCrae. Sobbing away.
I'll be saying
away.
That to you next time you're getting money on WhatsApp. Definitely.
Weirdly, complaining that the referee blew the whistle as Liam Kelly saved a shot on target, which, get it right fucking up you. Good. Motherwell were good. Stephen O'Donnell, maybe having a gentle renaissance. He mentioned the other day. Mentioned the other day that he's got another year, which is news to basically everyone, because as far as we knew, he was out of contract. So I think he must have already been offered an extension, and he's going to be sticking around for another year, which would be class, because he, for my money, might be the biggest prick in Scottish football by quite some distance. He spent his entire
that
game...
That is quite a call, Graham.
Genuinely, I genuinely will back this up. There's just numerous moments throughout this game but he was just noising people up simply because he could. There's a point where he's wrestling with Keith Watson on the ground when your man Edwards came on. O'Donnell basically just went and found him and stood next to him and just wound him up. Had a couple of dives. He got booked for a daft tackle, and then he got booked for a second league daft one. In between that, which didn't make any of the highlights, was him basically touching O'Donnell's jersey and O'Donnell hitting the deck with barely any contact in order to just get in the referee's head.
I like the idea of Stephen O'Donnell now just wandering around. I've just realised it's Stephen O'Donnell's middle name's Stephen Gerrard O'Donnell. Anyway, just like the idea of him wandering around Scottish Premiership pitches now and just talking about how he's got 26 caps for Scotland.
Yep. It's just like whatever. Any time anyone gives him any shit about, I've got 26 caps for Scotland, mate.
I played in the Euros, mate.
Played at the Euros.
Andre Wembley, mate.
What have you done?
I think Ross County quite disappointed with that. I mean, they obviously had a huge result last week, and Jordan White getting a hat trick, and they looked really, really not at it. I mean, Danda had a few through balls that got through. Samuel tried to slot one into the corner, but he'd done really well. But it looked. I saw Yakoviti went off. That's not good news for going into these last couple of games.
They came for a point. Like they very clearly, pretty early doors, decided we are going to come here for a point. And if we get a point, we'll be absolutely delighted with that. And ultimately, maybe just a bit earned it.
When you're playing against a team with a guy in Van Veen's form, I think that's really, really risky. I'm assuming. It's hard to think that you're going to definitely keep a clean sheet, which is kind of like when you play for a draw. That's kind of what you mean. You're playing for a. You're trying to make sure you don't concede. Yeah. I find that quite dodgy tactically.
Noah Kenna is also an absolutely atrocious footballer.
But you can't kick the ball properly.
Anyone that was involved at Hibernian that saw him signed for the club. Should retire as far as I'm concerned. I thought he was absolutely atrocious. He's not good at anything. He's one of these guys you look at and wonder quite how he managed to make it as far as he did up against a kind of midfield three of Goss, Spittle and Payton, and then latterly Cornelius as well. He just could not compete. The whole game was just passing him by, and then when he was in the ball, he was just lashing it miles away from people.
Thank goodness Hibs didn't give him a big bumpered contract.
Yeah. Now we've got him and Jimmy Jago for next season.
What a midfield pairing that'll be.
100% you Hibs are having to play that at some point next season. Maybe in their first European tie.
Yeah, it'll be
probably in a derby.
The two guys who can't kick the ball properly. I don't want people rolling. I think Jago's made a difference for him since he's been a part of some of our big results, but he's not much of a footballer. And Kenny's the same. It's like they lack the sort of technique. It's quite weird because Kenny's came for Leeds and came a bit of a reputation. They really see us coming, down south. They really do with these under 23s.
They do.
Believe these leagues are fucking good. They're not. They're just Bairns leagues.
The whole thing's like, Leeds wanted to give them a new deal.
That's what they tell you.
Sure, they did.
That's what the agent tells you when he's saying, "I want that up to another I want that up to £5,000 a week." Thanks. So, Motherwell. I mean, I'm really impressed that Motherwell the season's never fizzled out despite not having anything to play for.
It's like they've lost that
because Livingston has been the complete polar opposite till Saturday.
It's like the whole Motherwell team have collectively gone, right, we are getting Van Veen, this top goal scorer. This is going to be a league title. This is going to be a European qualification.
There's been a couple of games.
Like that meme in FIFA when they open, they lift up the trophy. You know, it has, but it said it's actually just Van Veen. They lift it up into the sky.
Genuinely, it was the United game that we lost. Genuinely felt like Kevin Van Veen's testimonial. It was just a case of like, right, give him the ball, do that. And he did have a frustrating afternoon on Saturday as well. He was doing that, one of those things where, having one of those days when he was shooting when he should have passed and passing when he should have shot. It was a very entertaining way to spend an afternoon. And you're quite right, the fact that it's not fizzled out is kind of remarkable to the degree that I think Dan Casey's broken his arm essentially because he was throwing himself, trying to defend, and then ultimately either broke his arm or popped his shoulder out, one or the other. A guy who's here on like a short-term deal and ultimately has, I presume, we've offered him a contract for next season, but ultimately has real no skin in the game for any of this, but still throwing his body on the line in order to try and get Motherwell a point against Ross County, as it was at the time.
I think you're really happy with Kettlewell going into next season.
Yeah. Whatever he is or he isn't, we'll find out longer term. But fundamentally, he has looked at the Motherwell squad and gone, right, what are you good at? What are you bad at? Right, let's focus on getting you to do as a team, as a unit, to focus on the things that we're good at, and we'll just ignore all the stuff you're bad at and try
getting
and hide
the ball
it.
To Van
Veen. Mm. Yeah. Just hide and try it. And ultimately, you're quite right on that front. But again, it's getting the ball to Van Veen with somebody standing beside him. Mm. Mandron is not a great player. Abika, we know, and is a limited player, but again, gets the best out of other people. He's got
We spoke about this with St Johnston, how there's like, get a partner for me. We know that, yeah. I know that they aren't very good, Blair and
this is Rudden.
Rudden, but like it'll make him better, and that's and you're not losing that much of your midfield because that's not particularly good either. So just don't worry about it. Just get someone up there, and obviously the improvement he's made with Goss and Spill as well. That can't be ignored.
Sean Goss is in what is ultimately the form of his career just now because we're just playing him as a six to go and intercept the ball and play the ball on, and then the back three of just like Hall McGinn being the one that actually plays a little bit, Butcher empties the ball and occasionally plays in case he just lumps the ball whenever he can.
You didn't have a proper defensive midfielder who put in tackles, so you signed Butcher and he became and then he sorted out all your defensive issues in centre as a centre half in a three. So did not see that one coming.
That's been solving issues
for Kettlewell. He's seen that. That's good management.
Even having lost, I mean, Max Johnson felt like a really key piece to the team as well because he just has such electric pace and he's just so bold in the way that he plays. The guy, the kid just has no fear whatsoever. He's fucking somewhere, allegedly injured, probably not. It's just hanging out, tracking a contract. So he just brings O'Donnell back in, who's barely played for us in months. I've seen very little out of him during his time at Motherwell, and immediately comes in and is like, oh yeah, okay, these are the things that I'm good at. So you're asking me to do the things I'm good at, so I'll make the best of it.
I like managers like that in general who take out your weaknesses. They make sure you just concentrate on the things that you're
good at. Managers at our
level, I think that's really a really good skill.
Got to make the best of what you've got, and that's what he's done. It's been terrific. Nonetheless, I think that all rounds off unless anybody has any more on Motherwell versus Ross County. Smashing. Well, thank you very much for joining us on this Monday Terrace podcast show. I had threatened to keep it to a tight 45 minutes and I have failed miserably. Thank you very much for your time, Joel.
I feel we barely analysed the game as well. I think we're just waffling away.
And thank you very much for your time, Tony.
Oh, Graham, it's my pleasure.
we are off to the Patreon, where we are going to discuss the worst goalkeepers we've ever seen. Thank you much for your time, and we will probably be back at 40 different times this week on 40 different Patreons, so do sign up and do enjoy it. There's only two games left, lads.
I just looked down at my phone and I saw I had 20 mentions in my Twitter, and that means one of those lists must have went out.
Oh no.
Smashing. Enjoy the lists, and we'll see you all soon. Bye bye, guys. Sports Social Podcast Network.